I'll keep that in mind.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Aiken City Council work session on April 11th, 2005. We have one item for discussion on our work session, and that is design guidelines for the downtown. So without further ado, Mr. LeDuc, would you like to lead us off into that?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. It's a very important meeting tonight as we discuss the downtown area and design guidelines. For the last several years, City Council has looked at the idea of having design guidelines. When we got involved with this aspect, we looked at some of the things that we received from Columbia, which has developed some very unique design guidelines for some of their older neighborhoods. We, through City Council, have hired Randy Wilson, who works with community builders. He's an architect who specializes in downtowns, older structures, and he is here tonight to present some guidelines that have been looked at by various committees that have been meeting for the last at least 6 months. And hopefully what council sees you will like, and then we can take the next step after that. And so even before he gets up here, it's something as he's moving along in the discussion, council will need to decide what to do with these guidelines that we have here. Is this something that you would like to, one option would be to bring it forward as a first reading. Another option would be going back to the committee for more work. More city could have another work session on this, you know, after we get some more detailing from Randy. We're here to help in any way that we can, and hopefully in the near future we could get this moving forward so that we could get something adopted for the downtown before we see any more major construction or possibly some other structures being removed in that area. So without further ado, here's Randy Wilson.
Randy, I thought you were a reporter sitting
up. That's what I heard. I was in the peanut gallery, but I felt like it was the quickest way for me to get up here. But Mr. Mayor, members of council, good evening. It's good to be back with you again. And I'm particularly pleased to present to you tonight the progress that's been made. As I told the mayor a few moments ago, if you've stared at something for 6 to 8 months and you still like it, then it's probably a good sign. I'm going to be extraordinarily brief. I am only going to make 6 points. And frankly, those 6 points will ideally, thank you very much, Bill, reveal 6 distinctives of your sets of design guidelines, and then leave the balance of the time available for your questions, your review. And yes, I'm going to be a bad Santa Claus. I'm going to wait until after my remarks to pass out the actual documents, because I know you wouldn't listen to me otherwise. I'm just kidding. First, we're going to look at the purpose. I just think it's very important to revisit very briefly why we did what we did. Secondly, the process, because I think particularly from a political point of view, it was a very important process and it was the right thing to do. And then we're just going to look at 4 points related to the document itself, how it's set up, the structure, some things that make yours very distinctive, and then next steps from here. You're probably infinitely aware, but just to reiterate briefly, the main goals and purposes for these guidelines, number one, was to safeguard your investment. You know, you see up there 5 images from Aiken, and whether it is the investment that Todd Lista has made in the historic post office, or Malia's in a wonderful rear entry to their building, or particularly you on council, the public investment you've made in your streetscaping and projects such as the Newberry Festival site. It just behooves everyone to ensure a standard of quality and care that safeguards the investment that's been made monetarily by both the public and the private sector. A second key objective was to be true to Aiken. We aren't trying to turn you into anybody else, but rather appeal to you. Matter of fact, our only standard for the quality and the level of design is Aiken itself, and I'll illustrate that in some slides in a minute. Next was to make sure we promoted a ton of can-do solutions rather than take an approach of telling an owner what he cannot do with their property. We've actually taken the approach and said, you know, here's a ton of ways to accomplish our desire for this particular design issue. And finally, if they aren't easy to use and easy to administer, then we've wasted our time. They need to be easy to use so that they pose no impediment to development and to business. And they need to be easy to administer so they pose no impediment to you all and the staff that you assign to administer them. The process was highly participatory. It was highly public. And I think that is absolutely the right thing to do. We started with a subcommittee, and it was comprised of people from ADDA as well as just concerned citizens. And they really worked. I didn't do all the work. They were out there with me taking photographs of your buildings, doing surveys, conducting sidewalk surveys. But then the second key process was the public workshops. We did two public workshops, had a lot of participation. And if you remember in the first slide, I said our standard is only Aiken. Our goal here is to just make sure that the character and the quality that exists in Aiken is maintained. Well, that sounds like good, nice verbiage, but what does that mean? In the public workshops, people finally figured out what we mean when we say the character of the downtown commercial area of Aiken. At the bottom, you see a strip of buildings. We took photographs of every commercial building in your downtown area, and we composed those together, and all of a sudden it revealed to the participants, you know, the building heights, the materials, the bay systems. And it began to make sense to them what we mean when we say we want to appeal to the character of the architecture in downtown Aiken. And as a result, perhaps one of the most gratifying things I think that occurred in the process, and you have to ask them, not me, is I think they understood what your goals are and how this process could be beneficial. So let's look at the document itself. Again, it needed to be easy to use. I have limited the thickness of the document. I know Sam Erb, he was panicking. He thought I was going to plop an inch thick document on his table. It really only has seven chapters, and the first one is sort of just there for logical, obvious reasons, but it's really not even the focus. We need to set up the boundaries and the purpose and the process of the review. The key chapters are chapters 2, 3, and 4, in which we address site design, guidelines for new buildings, guidelines for existing buildings. My attitude is it needs to be simple and obvious. Chapter 5 deals with some things that don't fit neatly into those categories, such as paint and paint colors, signage, and public art. And then Chapter 6 we're going to talk about in detail, so I won't even talk about it right now. And then Chapter 7 are the appendices in which we clarify terms and give a historical background for downtown Aiken. Again, the three key chapters are those that pertain to site design, new construction, and then existing buildings. Each page is set up identically, and I felt like that was important so that you would maintain a sense of continuity. You'd know where you were at all times in the document, and it'd be very clear. Each page contains these six components. First, up in the upper left or upper right corner will be a dark green circle that articulates the design issue that this particular guideline page is addressing. Next, in the light green band, we just put you in where you are in the document, whether we're referring to site design, new construction, or existing construction. And by the way, the reason I did this is I must have read 40, 50, 60 design guidelines to make sure what we did for Aiken was the best of the best. And what I found so often, think of this, whether we're addressing new buildings or existing buildings, in both cases you have to address things like doors, windows, and storefronts. And sometimes in the middle of a document and reading about windows, you forget, are we just speaking about historic buildings or new buildings? And so I just wanted to make it very plain and obvious and clear on each page. For each page and each issue, there's just a very clear, hopefully concise, introductory paragraph which just articulates, I hope, in common sense language what we're after. If you'll indulge me, I'll just read this one that pertains to building setback and alignment. Typically, zoning ordinances address building setback in terms of distance away from the street or property line. But in the context of a historic downtown, the goal is to provide a place where the pedestrian has priority, and this is done primarily by placing the buildings as close to the street as possible. New buildings in a historic context need to be considered by build-to lines as opposed to setback lines. I think, you know, that sort of language makes sense to most anyone. But to make sure they get it, at the bottom of the page, then we just have a series of bullets, guideline goals, if you will, in which we just sort of capture the essence of what we're after for that written paragraph. But perhaps most importantly of all, pictures and sketches are definitely worth 1,000 words. We illustrate with drawings what we mean when we're talking about building setback or building height or things of that nature. You'll see a red X and a green check. Remember that in the next slide. And then we want to use a ton of photographs because, again, it's so much easier to say this is what we want instead of trying to describe it in words. The photographs do such a much better job. One of our goals was to use primarily photographs from Aiken. Not all of the photographs in the document are from Aiken, but the overwhelming majority are. Again, the reason is we wanted to appeal only to Aiken. We don't want to turn you into any other place. Now, if you remember on the previous slide, there was a red X and there was a green check. And occasionally, it's easier to illustrate a point by telling what not to do as opposed to what to do. And the committee and I both want to offer this to you in the form of a question that we can address later. Since we use primarily photographs from Aiken, right now there are both positive green checks and there are negative red X's, and in some cases buildings in Aiken. And it was certainly not our intent in any way to either embarrass anyone or to make them feel called out or any of those types of feelings. And so if you feel like politically it would be better, it is no problem for us to remove those and use quote-unquote negative photographs from other places. The last thing we want to do is inadvertently make somebody mad when that was certainly not the intent. So if you'll just remember that question, we'll address it when I'm finished. To me, the single biggest thing that's going to distinguish your guidelines from any others that I've seen is Chapter 6. In Chapter 6, I decided to include two design review checklists. The first would be for the applicant themselves. And basically, I've taken the entire document, Chapters 2, 3, and 4, and I have pulled out in sort of bulleted goal statement fashion the very key points that each of those sections try to address. And as a result, this becomes an easy way for the applicant to come meet with your staff liaison and quickly go through this checklist and just see if they have met the spirit or the intent of the guidelines. And I'll just give you a few examples. If someone's proposing a new building, you know, 2.4F, have they preserved historic features of the streetscape such as Aiken's Parkway medians? You know, have they created pedestrian interest at the street level? Have they located surface parking on appropriate sites? Just a couple of very brief key guideline goals that are articulated with their companion references on the left so they can get more detail if needed. But perhaps the most important checklist that follows is the one for the actual review commission itself. And I'm sure in just a moment we'll have a discussion about whether that should be an existing commission or a new commission, and we can talk about all that. I think you probably remember or were aware, I sat on the City of Columbia's Design Development Review Commission for 7 or 8 years. We reviewed both historic landmark properties as well as new construction in the downtown area. We had to look at 7 different review districts against 5 sets of design guidelines. So I feel everyone's pain, and that's why I've tried to make these as simple and easy to understand as possible. In my experience during that time in Columbia, never once were we sued and appealed because of our decision about the design. But you can bet we were challenged on a number of occasions because of the procedures in which we arrived at that decision. In my humble opinion, one of the key things that will ensure that not happening is that every applicant feels like they're treated fairly and equitably, and they receive the exact same review as other applicants. That's what will get you in a court faster than anything, is if an applicant feels like they were treated differently than another one. My admonishment as I train review boards around this state is always appeal to a checklist in your review and go systematically down it. I don't care if it's a 200-square-foot addition or a 200,000-square-foot new building. If you go through the checklist, you ensure each case is reviewed the same consistent way. But you know as well as I do, on any given commission, you've got people with a lot of architectural savvy. Then you've got someone who has the most wonderful heart in the world, but you know architecture is not their strong suit. You've got bankers, you've got lawyers, you've got accountants, you've got people from a myriad of backgrounds and walks of life. So what can we do to ensure a person that doesn't have an architectural degree can understand the process? And so I took every single issue that we've addressed in the guidelines, and I asked a number of elaborative questions for each so that every person on the commission can know what we're after. Again, if you'll indulge me, just a few examples. Relative to 2.1, building setback and alignment, the questions the commissioners need to ask are, what is the average distance from the face of the adjacent buildings to the edge of the street or sidewalk? Is this building in alignment with those adjacent buildings? If a building is missing, what elements have been designed to maintain the street wall? And streetscaping and landscape, is the distinctive parkway median treatment in Aiken maintained or compromised by this design? Are any proposed parking lots buffered with low walls and or landscaping? Are any trees being removed as a part of this application? And if so, are replacement trees being proposed? And what is their size, species, and spacing? I've just tried to do the homework for people to make it as easy as possible for them to get at the heart of what each issue is about. So in conclusion, where do we go from here? My best guess is these steps. I will obviously defer to your wisdom, and particularly Gary and the city attorneys, but I would humbly request that you do the same thing the committee is doing, and that is, I'm going to give you the documents in just a moment, and over the next few weeks, would you please read them and let us know if there are edits and changes that would need to be made. I think as a point of reference, it probably makes logical sense for your comments to filter through Bill Huggins. The committee itself is filtering their comments through Janet Morris. Next would be links back to the ordinance. Gary or someone will have to make sure at some point that there's a link between these guidelines and your city ordinances. Someone will also need to check and make sure there aren't any current conflicts between what we're proposing and the ordinance. Next is the review board itself. And again, I defer to your judgment. I'm happy to render an opinion about whether it should be a reconstituted existing review board or if it should be one created from scratch. I can also help you from many other models around the state about the constitution of that board, you know, what kinds of people need to be sure to be on them. Next would be either the hiring or the shifting of job descriptions to ensure that there's a very competent staff liaison. The staff liaison, that person who exists in between the applicant that's going to bring a request for a certificate of design approval and the review board, is one of the most important people in the chain. That person has to have good people skills. That person has to be able to deal with conflict. That person needs to have a sense of design background, understand the design guidelines implicitly, and be able to work out with applicants solutions. Matter of fact, your best staff liaison will make the review commission's job very minimal. If as many things as possible can be approved on the staff level, that prohibits a backlog of cases to the review board itself. In terms of training, I would also encourage that you seek out training for the review commission. It's something that I do around the state. Would be happy to help you. You may have your own sources. But again, the training needs to not only be about design. You're going to be shocked to hear an architect say this. The design is the easy part. I mean, figuring out if a building is appropriate or inappropriate, frankly, that's the easy part. The hard part is making sure you go through the proper procedures. And then finally, evaluation. I would recommend highly and strongly for the first couple of years that you do an annual sort of checkup and report card. As good a job as I've tried to do, I guarantee you we've probably missed something. But you won't know that until you've gone through a cycle of review cases. And so every year I would encourage you to evaluate it and see how the document can be shored up and improved. And frankly, that's all I have to say. And I will distribute the guidelines and entertain any questions you may have at this time.
Randy, thank you so much. I'm sure that we have some questions. I'd like to know, with your experience in Columbia, how you worked in Columbia. How did, what type of a committee did you have? Did you, you know, did it go through an existing committee? Did you have a separate committee?
Sure.
And
yeah, in Columbia, I'm just writing down your question so I can refer to them later. In Columbia, eight or nine years ago, there was only one commission, and it was solely devoted to historic properties. It was referred to as the Landmarks Commission, and it only dealt with properties that were locally designated. After the City Center Master Plan and Design Guidelines process, it was recommended that a new commission be formed that took all of the committee members from the Landmarks Commission and added a few. And so I was a part of that, and we had to wear two or three or four hats at one time. On any given day, and it was always clearly demarcated, we could review a historic property, and in which case we would have to review it against the Landmarks Commission sets of design guidelines, which was a higher level of review, a more strenuous thing. I think there's probably some parallels between the Landmarks Commission in Columbia and the Historic Preservation Committee or Commission here in Aiken. The properties at that level got reviewed fairly strenuously. Below that were five different review districts. The city center is the largest, and that's basically any commercial property greater than 5,000 square feet. And we had a set of design guidelines to review that against it. And we reviewed both renovation and new construction. That, I believe, if memory serves me correct, it was a panel of eight people. We had to have at least one architect, one attorney. We had to have someone from either a business slash development background or a banker to ensure the interest of the business people were represented, a realtor, and then I think four at large.
You said you were the architect on, you were compensated for sitting on that committee, or was that voluntary?
No, sir. The entire board was completely volunteer.
Is that the way it normally is?
Yes, sir. Typically it is. It's, again, I apologize, I'm not familiar with all the commissions that you have here, but in Columbia there's, you know, the Appearance Commission that deals with landscaping and trees. There's the Planning Commission, Zoning Commission, and in our case the Review Commission, and all of those are voluntary boards. The staff liaison position was a funded city position.
But it is important to have an architect on the committee?
I think it is. And
state law requires it.
Yes. Well, thank you. That's what I was going to say. No, it really wasn't. But if I'd have been smart enough, I would have. No, it's up to you whether you just want an architect or an architect with specific historic preservation experience. I really didn't have that coming into it. I've come out with a whole lot. So either way.
So you spent, 7 years on?
Yes, sir. Gary.
In working with other people around the state, how many have you seen that had more than one design review board in a particular city? Is it very many?
That's a good question. Let me think a second. I can't recall any off the top of my head.
Most of the cities that you've worked with combine their design review with their historic preservation review?
Yes, and of course there are very few of those.
Correct.
If you think about it, most communities, because we deal with community builders as the Main Street program, we deal with primarily small to medium-sized towns,
yeah.
And typically they just have one. And in many cases, they aren't even a certified local government. They don't have any locally designated historic properties. And so design review in those cases is basically just a generic area, anything that happens to be within it, be it historic or new construction.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Can you have of the same committee but different functions? In other words, the historical, obviously we know what they do because they're very set in stone as far as what's done legally. I think it's set in the state, is it not, as far as the law?
Yep.
And have that same committee but operated under a different set of guidelines.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's precisely how we did it in Columbia. I mean, we had this set of guidelines if it was a historic property, then we had this set of guidelines if it was just in City Center. And then we had another set if it was near University of South Carolina, and another set, I mean, it was outrageous. And thankfully, what the city did for us is they tried to congregate them so each month we would only have to review cases in one or two or three of those different classifications. But it's a very important question, because I think you understand it takes a certain level of competency to be able to wear those different hats and not treat, well, let's just be blunt, not treat a downtown commercial building the same way you would a historic house. The two are very, very different. And again, it just takes a certain level of sophistication to always make sure we're reviewing this against the appropriate criteria, and we're reviewing this against the appropriate criteria.
The way this is written, does it keep a building that is of historical significance, may not be on the historical register or anything like that, but of historical significance, a prominent landmark of Aiken, does it keep that from being torn down?
In section 4.3, page 43, is a page on demolitions. And the basic points under this section are, number one, that we're going to do everything in our power to preserve a building if we can within reasonable means. But I think it's important to say there are certain instances in which it is the best course of action. But there are certain criteria that need to be met. And so I've outlined a little bit here. I would highly recommend, when it comes to demolitions, there should be a separate, if you will, application form that outlines point by point the criteria that have to be met in order for a request for demolition to be satisfied. There needs to be a compelling proof from the owner that demolition is the most appropriate and feasible course of action. Now, that's, on one hand, that's easy. He gets a bid, shows that, you know, tearing it down is a lot cheaper than restoring it. That's not enough. You need to get a companion document to verify those numbers. Next, you need to establish what do you plan to do with the property once the building is demolished. And that's usually going to cut out most requests for demolition, is do not grant any request for demolition if there's not a plan in place for how the project's going to be reused. Now, obviously, and here's where the gray area comes in, and I'm going to defer to Gary. When there's a life, health, safety risk involved, then the standard of care goes up, and you may have to demolish it for those reasons. But here's the rub. Here's the gray area. More times than not, when a building is in that status, it's because it's demolition by neglect. A certain level of care and maintenance has not been done on the building over time. This is the part that's awkward to talk about. On most cities' rolls, there is an ordinance that's a minimum maintenance ordinance, which should prevent buildings in getting to that state. Having an ordinance and enforcing an ordinance are two very different things. And by the way, I am in no way referring to you. I'm referring to Columbia. You know, it was always awkward for us to sit on the commission. Someone would walk in with a request for demolition. And the question we're begging is, how did it get in this state when we have on the books measures to prevent it? And it was an issue where the city just didn't enforce their own ordinances. And it puts everyone in sort of an awkward position. So does this document in and of itself prevent it? Only to the degree that I've just outlined. You know, we've set up a set of, if you will, safeguards. But the honest answer, no. I mean, nothing technically can entirely. And again, I would defer to Gary if you want to elaborate. And
how do you define a historic structure?
Well, I believe you all have established it on one level. I think the second level will be the generation of an overlay district. Now, whether you want to call it a historic structure, it depends on the terminology you're going to use to define your overlay district. For example, in my neighborhood, it's just called a design preservation. So they aren't historic properties. It's just we happen to exist within a design preservation district. I don't know what you're going to call it. You may just call it, for the overlay over the downtown, you may just call it the downtown commercial district. In that case, the issue is not whether the building is historic or not. The issue is if the building is a downtown commercial building. But by the way, the technical definition is 50 years of existence, and you know, either a historic event or the architecture makes it of distinguishing nature. But of course, that in and of itself, independent of any local protection, is a very nominal protection. Yes, sir.
Did Columbia go outside the Vista area and into the residential of Columbia to ensure that the architectural of the older homes and
absolutely
the maintained?
So absolutely.
It wasn't just the downtown that they were trying, but they went into the other residential areas of the old Columbia area.
Yes, sir. My neighborhood is a perfect example. I live in Elmwood Park. It's right beside Elmwood Avenue, the dominant gateway into the city. And so we have our own sets of design guidelines and review, similar to the area at USC. There's another area called the Shandon, the lower Shandon Waverly District, which I promise you, if you drove through it, you'd think, why do they even bother with design guidelines? Because the quality of care is such that it's not a very wealthy or attractive place. But the goals for that set of guidelines, unlike the ones that we're talking about here tonight, were to raise the bar. You know, in Aiken, we don't need to do guidelines in order to raise the bar design. We just need to protect what you have. In Lower Shandon Waverly, we needed to raise the bar on design. But, for example, in Lower Waverly, synthetic siding is allowed. In my neighborhood, no way. It's got to be the real thing.
Separate design groups,
yes, sir.
Though? Separate
yes, sir.
Committees?
No. All one commission.
All one committee.
But different documents. Exactly. Yeah, we have a notebook that has, again, five or seven different sets of guidelines. And depending on what we're reviewing, we flip to that section, and that becomes the standard of care for that review.
Randy, in Columbia, do these guidelines that you have for the five districts, they have to be abided by? They're not strictly guidelines to use as a guide, in other words. They're mandatory.
They are.
What I'm saying.
And they are. We only review exteriors of property, only what's readily visible from the street. Function and use are of no consequence, but they are mandatory. You know, my recommendations would be, you know, that's what they need to be. If they're voluntary, then we've probably wasted our time.
Right.
But I think to the degree that you can dangle a carrot out there for the stick, I think it would be wonderful. You know, in certain cities, Conway is a good example. For if you would like to apply for a facade grant, then you have to go through the process. And in exchange for going through the process, you not only get design services, then you get money, a certain degree to fix it.
And we have that here, too.
And, you know, I think once you've done that, I think you've really revealed your intent. Your intent really is for the good of the community. You aren't trying to impose something on anybody, as demonstrated by the offer of financial help to bring it up to that standard.
One other question.
Yes,
is any particular one of these districts in Columbia, you said there were five, I think,
yes, sir,
that would fit right into Aiken, as you see?
City center. The downtown area, yes, sir. But we probably have the most latitude in city center of any property. And some of the solutions these days are wonderful, but they're total extreme. Some are very traditional and some are very contemporary. But they both adhere to a certain body of principles.
Right. Could we get a copy of those so that we could just look at it and see
how
maybe some of that would help us and make it a little bit easier for us as we move through this process?
As a matter of fact, there are certain sections in here that are largely adapted from those because they were so appropriate. The wonderful thing, pardon me, Jane, I'll get right to you, is I don't know if you noticed on the bottom of one of the slides I showed you was a strip of buildings that were all Aiken's facades.
Yeah.
And that analysis is what revealed the solutions for you all. Within that, there's so much latitude. You know, an architect could design so many solutions that would still satisfy the architectural character of Aiken. And that's sort of the companion to city center in Columbia. While it's the historic downtown, you've got buildings that are highly contemporary and highly traditional. And they can really coexist as long as they adhere to the architectural characteristics that we stipulate in the guidelines. Jane.
Do you think that that these set of guidelines would be good enough to, say, have a downtown commercial historic district? The reason I ask that is I was at a meeting last Thursday at the State Archives and History Office, and there's some new state laws that really create substantial tax credits for... But the requirement is the building has to be in a designated historic district. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be designated individually.
Right.
But a 25% credit on your state income taxes is a nice thing, or whatever some of these offered. And I was hoping that we would be able to adapt, you know, guidelines that were more attuned to a commercial district and along with this, but still be able to get that historic designation. Sure. So that our property owners could get the tax breaks. Do you think that would be possible?
Oh, absolutely. It's entirely up to you. I mean, all you have to do is ensure that you've got a set of standards, the guidelines, and the overlay district. You know, my neighborhood itself qualifies for the same thing, and we.
Oh, really?
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, my wife wants to strangle me, because if there's anyone in the state who should have known that, it was me. We bought a house, renovated it, and I totally forgot about the tax credits until we were finished.
Does the Vista have?
I'm not sure. I could find that.
Why would you not want to have that?
If the
guidelines are mandatory. And that's not the only way they work. Why would we not want to have it where our people could get a tax credit?
I can't imagine the reason.
I mean, from just business sense, there's got to be something we don't know.
If it's only the name.
Well, I think you just hit the nail on the head. I think it is the name. I think there has been some consideration here. And I think we need to talk frankly that... The historic review has been so strenuous that they didn't want that same level of review for the historic area. Now, that doesn't mean it's not a historic area. It's just you have a lower standard of review. You know, I can see how you have a third level. You may want to have this area that's defined on page one. And outside the boundaries, you have a next level down. You know, I think about, you know, some of the thoroughfares along Whiskey Road and then the commercial area. You know, the commercial areas shouldn't have the same level of review as downtown, nor should the downtown commercial have the same level of review as your houses. But absolutely, you can qualify for the CLG and for the tax credits in your downtown area.
And you could guide us so that we could label things properly then. And do you still have this designation of contributing, non-contributing, and all that stuff, or do you not have to get into that?
I'm not sure. I'll have to do some research on that, and Gary and I can put our heads together.
Other question, what's a good way, I mean, in the meantime, while we're hashing through these, it's going to take time. What do you do if you're going through this and then you get a proposal that is probably not going to conform with this? Did Columbia face that or not?
I'm sure they probably did, because you know there's always things going on in the development world. Time doesn't wait for us to get our ducks in a row, unfortunately.
No, that's right.
Probably the only thing you could do is just to offer it on sort of a courtesy level. Again, and this takes a fairly significant paradigm shift. The way you want people to start reviewing these guidelines is how to help them achieve good design, not tell them what they can't do. That staff liaison in the City of Columbia, it's like free design services. You know, for the developer that comes in, I mean, her whole goal, Krista Hampton, she's phenomenal. Her whole goal and agenda is to make them pass. And she is empowered to use as much latitude, you know, as she can to ensure that they have good design. And so oftentimes she will call me in and we'll propose, well, the Hampton Inn on Gervais Street. They couldn't figure out how to do the entry. I did them a couple of quick sketches. We helped them pass our review. And that's where you need to get to so that person who comes to you before these are enacted, they view you or the review commission as an advocate to help them pass. But legally, there's really nothing you can require until that time.
Rodney, I just wondered whether Columbia faced resistance.
Oh,
And if so, how did you handle their... Was it education?
Yes.
Was it...
I mean, I'd be lying if I said, oh, no, everybody welcomed them with open arms.
No, because I know that we're going to face some resistance if we decide to.
It's like a lot of things in life. It's all about public perception and the reality. Mm-hmm. You know, if... And that's why I think the process that we embarked on here and that you all suggested was of immense importance. The fact that it involved a lot of people. In fact, the fact that we educated a lot of people about what good design is and what you had. Mm-hmm. My suspicion is the people that went through those workshops probably have no fear whatsoever of this, these sets of guidelines and the commensurate review process. If you didn't attend and you think it's something being handed down from government, yeah, there's probably going to be some fear. But to me, the things that sort of mitigate that are the fact that they're guidelines. They aren't mandates, they're guidelines. They're a set of operating principles. And number two, you're offering them financial help to adhere to them. But yes, there was opposition. There probably still are.
The traffic has... increased tremendously, I noticed, in the Vista area.
Yes, ma'am.
Is that what you expected? Is it in terms of...
It's hard to say this without, you know, the appearance of pride, but the design guidelines and the review for the Vista have been an overwhelming success. An architect that was reviewing to us one day a project, he says, I'm so glad you all have crafted these guidelines and you've crafted such a good commission, because what it does is, for us good architects who have done quality design in the past, it gives us more ammunition to go to the owners and talk about the benefits. And for those who've done mediocre architecture in the past, they have to raise their standard of care. And if you go look just the corridor between UG and, let's say, Maine along Gervais, there's probably 6 new buildings, and they range from something as traditional a fit as the Hampton Inn to the contemporary Vista Lofts and the SC, I can't remember the name of the bank, kind of an in-between building. Actually, it was in one of the photographs. But the standard of care, it's off the charts. The buildings that we're getting to review now are exceptional, and I believe it's partly due to the guidelines.
Don't you find, too, that it actually increases property value?
Oh.
Because that's how you sell it.
Absolutely.
And you may not like this, but believe me, you will like it in the future because your property is going to be worth more.
And I didn't even bother, thank you so much, I think put the ball on the tee for me. I didn't even bother saying that because I just assume that's common knowledge anymore. I mean, the overwhelming numbers are in the favor. When you have got two properties, or two areas, one without review, one with review, the lowest number typically is 26% that this one appreciates at a higher rate than the adjacent one. And the proof's in the pudding. I bought my house 12 years ago, sold it for 3 times what I paid for it. But when I first moved in, it's like, are you kidding me? When I want to paint my building, I've got to get permission. I can't believe they make me do that. You know, at first, I kind of copped an attitude. But once you realize the economic benefit, it's like when the next person moves in, you know, I'm kind of like the first advocate. It's, oh, no, you got to get that approved, because that person's gesture on their building affects my property. And that's the thing to communicate. I would just offer a humble question as pertains to this whole notion downtown. Is it not unreasonable to ask each property owner downtown to at least achieve the standard of care in the overall area? I mean, that's just what it means to be a good citizen. That's all we're asking them to do. We aren't asking them to become Charleston or wherever, you know, some standard that's not you. All we're asking them to do is be a good citizen of Aiken and have your building live up to the character of Aiken. I think that's a reasonable request. And that's what these things do.
Randy, there's a McDonald's, I think it is, on Gervais.
Yes, sir.
It looks nice.
Yes, it does.
I mean, it's unlike any other McDonald's that you see around. What kind of problems, do you remember any kind of problems you had when you tackled that issue, if you did tackle that issue while you were there?
And I actually have some better examples for you than that one. the McDonald's, the Hampton Inn, and then there's a convenience store that's just located on Assembly.
Yeah, grocery store as well, but you...
Yeah, oh, that's right, the Publix. Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you, Leslie. The only problem, if you will, is just it was inconvenient for the owner because we requested a number of submittals, and each time it got better and better until we were all fine. But it took a few meetings to get to that point. And to be honest, it took... And this is hard to say, but you need to hear it. It will take some flexibility on your review commission's part as well. Because there were some things that we gave up in order to get what we got. Yes, it's a very attractive McDonald's. It's two stories as opposed to one. It's brick instead of the normal. It has, you know, metal canopies instead of the norm. But the second floor, it's not real. It's fake. Our preference would have been that it be a real space, upper floor housing, although I don't know I want to live on top of a McDonald's. But my point is, it would have been better had those windows been real and looked into something real. But we felt like, let's don't lose the war for the sake of this one battle. And so there has to be some give and take.
Was any of that plan commercial, or was all still under the guise of the... Vista and the Downtown Review, because it was already existing buildings? Because we do have a lot of we've attacked some of the newer areas with planned commercial, which means we get to say what the design is going to be, rather than just commercial, which means you can build a red roof, whatever you want, and if it's planned commercial, they got to submit it to us and Planning Commission, and we get to look at the colors and all that kind of stuff.
Right. Well, I think the solution, and I would humbly submit a better option, is an overlay district. That way you don't have to get into changing zoning classifications. Does everybody understand?
What did you just say? I'm sorry, I missed some words there. I'm sorry.
What I would submit... let me clarify that I interpreted your question correctly. Is should the zoning classifications be changed to ensure, you know, it comes through? Is that a fair way to?
Well, my point was, we do most of the problems that we've had in the outer areas where the growth has been is the fact that, you know, if it's commercial, they can build whatever they want to. We've tried to attack that with the new stuff that we zoned it planned commercial, which means they have to submit the designs of it. In other words, if it was a planned commercial, even without parcel, they'd have to submit what the design was going to be.
I got you.
So that was just a point.
Now, are you referring to the downtown area or those areas?
I'm referring to
that's a different animal.
What was your comment about they get a monetary, there's a monetary gain? Do you remember that when you were talking about something just a few minutes ago? They'll want to do this because there's a monetary...
Well, it's just historically...
Oh, that was the
areas that have review standards, guidelines, and a review commission have appreciated in value significantly higher and faster than those that don't.
Thank you.
If I understand correctly, the five districts you have up there,
yes, sir,
were all in existing neighborhoods, not total new development as we are faced with the annexations out of Whiskey Road, that sort of thing.
Yes, sir, that's correct.
But what I've been thinking about, it would be very reasonable for us to even have this kind of guideline for that sort of development and have it subject to the same design and review.
That's correct. Obviously, it would be a different standard of care and review.
Yes, we'd have to prepare.
Like, you may have an area that's called a commercial... I'm trying to think of a good word. Like, a lot of quintessentially traditional cities have a downtown core and then urban development and then a strip commercial development in between. Well, it'd be great to have a set of documents that govern that, but the standard of care there obviously would be different than downtown.
Mm-hmm. Again,
go ahead.
But yes, you could.
And it would, in fact, I think, make it easier for developers early on. They have an idea of where they ought to be going.
Right.
How many of those areas or those different areas had historic district designation?
Historic district.
Probably have different properties in each one that had historic properties. Is that right? Did you have entire neighborhoods designated?
Yeah. For example, I don't really know how to answer the question. Like my neighborhood, there are no individual properties that are historic.
Right.
It's just the entire area is a district, and all the properties are contributing.
But you said there were seven areas, and I just wondered,
right,
all of them?
I don't think all of them
no,
would be.
No, but some of them. There are,
right,
more than one or two.
My suspicion is probably four to five of those would be.
And that is on, that was done through the local, on the local level by whom?
By the city.
By the city.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Shandon Waverly is not.
Yeah. Shandon is. Lower Shandon Waverly would not be.
And as far as this, the area that was canvassed, we got as much public input in these blocked areas as shown on page 6. Is that correct?
Well, we outlined that area at each of the workshops.
Right. So we didn't get as far as going outside that area for Old Lake and Master Plan. That,
right.
This is basically what this encompasses, is this neighborhood.
That's right? Correct. You know, we felt like it was apples and oranges, and we felt like you were already doing a good job of reviewing adjacent residential neighborhoods. We wanted to stick to what we quintessentially deemed commercial properties.
Keep it simple, Larry. Your line there is essentially the current downtown district. So,
okay.
We just use that as a parameter to start. If you want to change the parameters, you can, but it just makes sense on the stick with the existing downtown district designation and the existing zoning district.
Did you have? You said you had guidelines as far as color was concerned. Are those in here?
I can't believe you asked that question. I had a difference of opinion, by the way. Believe it or not, I don't. My personal view, independent of this process, is I don't really care to regulate color. We don't regulate color in Columbia. But it was a strong opinion and feeling of the committee that we should. And so given that, I felt like the best approach would be what I call the palette approach, that there might be one, two, or three color palettes pre-approved, and then you give the applicant access to those palettes, and as long as they pick colors off of those, then it's automatically approved. And that's a very reasonable approach.
Mm-hmm. Getting down to the boundaries of this area that we chose, we did a windshield tour. Basically, all 10 cars, and when you feel that you arrive in downtown. And after doing it, it's hard living here all the time. You know, it would have been easier if it was a stranger, but it's basically the same area that ADA is in charge of, per se. As far as expanding that, mm-hmm. You know, that was part of our
Randy, we're getting close to 7. We want to thank you very much for all the work you've done and also the committee. How many members have been on the committee that are here right now? Raise your hand.
They've done a great job.
4 or 5, and thank you all very much. What I would like to propose to council is that we schedule another special work session, probably in May, because we've got a number of meetings and special meetings coming up in April, the rest of April. And ask Randy, when we get a time that can suit all of us, we'll ask Randy if he can come down and spend an hour and a half or 2 hours with us. And then we can go through a lot of these open questions that we have. I'm sure we have.
Thank you. But thank you very much for the privilege. It's been fun to work with you all and the committee.
Thank you, Randy.
There is nothing we can do, though, in the meantime, in case something that doesn't conform with any of this comes
well,
up?
Well, by law, Randy outlined that. I think talking to people and trying to have some friendly persuasion as to what we're trying to do and what we're getting to, it's, I mean, well, short of that, we don't have a law to enforce. So unless someone else can think of something else that we can do.
You know, since you're in the downtown, you know, all of these properties are already in the city. When we have done it in the past, like with traffic management and that sort of thing, it has always been on an annexation type of situation where we didn't have to annex the property to begin with. and we would say, okay, we'll annex the property, but we want you to comply with this book that hadn't been passed as an ordinance yet, but we want you to comply with this traffic plan. And so they had the choice, you know, either annex or don't annex. You don't have that option available to you for downtown properties. And what it highlights to me is the need for council to act on this thing pretty quick, even if we're passing an inexact ordinance.
Exactly.
Go ahead and get it passed, and then, you know, we can make changes. And
move ahead.
Yeah. Right.
Well, we can look at the rest of April and see what we can fit in. But we've got four or five meetings, I think.
We'll get the big bucks for
them. Oh, yeah. Hey, I'm with them. That's fine. Well, why don't we look at April, the rest of April, and maybe we have to delay something else, perhaps. But,
Randy, a quick
point. Yeah, Randy.
I believe I made this point last time I was here. I want to reiterate it because it particularly relates to Gary's role here. To me, it's very critical that you use these guidelines as an amendment to your ordinance and not embed them in the ordinance themselves, because that will give you the maximum flexibility to address those issues that we discover along the way, and that way you can get them in quickly and modify them over time.
Right. Thank you. Okay, we'll look for a meeting time in April. Everybody agree with that? Knowing what we've already got? Okay, fine. Let's look for a time in April, and then we'll see what Randy's schedule is.
Are we talking about a working session with Randy or a public?
Work session.
Well, it'll be a work session. It's open to anyone that wants to come. But he'll be here again. In the meantime, we'll have a chance to have read and studied what you've given us. And also, if we could get what you have, that one district, Center City there. And then we can
see them online. If you just go to Columbia.
Okay. All right. We'll do that then. Go to the internet and get it. Okay. Now, are there any other suggestions?
My question is just, we have a work session. This is a change. We're going to have two public hearings, right? We've got one reading and the second reading. So we're working. We got two.
You want to just move it right?
Well, what I'm saying is, before I vote anything, I'm sure it's not going to read every line of this because it's very, very important. But I guess what I'm saying, rather than meet with you again, I mean, this is the second time I've met with you, I'd like to get started on the public input. That's not really the key.
Well,
we got to read this and do it all, move along.
I think, well, certainly one thing we have to decide is whether we want to incorporate this in the Historic Preservation Commission or have a separate commission.
I think we need to see what our guidelines are going to be first. I really do.
Well, I think so, too.
See how much time they're going to take, we think, and to see if that sounds practical or impractical.
Well, as long as the work session has a public input, that'll move us further along.
Oh, sure. Sure. Okay.
So we look at our calendars now a little bit, or
you want to look at your calendars? Let's do that at the end of the next of a meeting. We'll have some time, hopefully. Okay.
We've only got three special meetings for May as it is. So
before Randy leaves, I just want to thank him and Bill Huggins has been the major staff person, has just been done a yeoman's job working with Randy and getting it to where it's at. And really like to thank both of them for all that they've done and the other committee members. I know that Janet Morris with ADDA mm-hmm. has just done a great job and working with the different merchants and shop owners down there. So thank you.
All right. Okay, let's take a quick break. Gentlemen, welcome to Aiken City Council meeting of April 11th, 2005, and we appreciate you being here and all the work that you've done. Most of you have been on committees, I'm sure, and we appreciate what we're about to talk about. If you would, as we get started, if you'd stand with us for prayer and a pledge of allegiance.
Before we bow our heads in prayer, as I looked around today, I was in and out several times, and I thought each time I came out, what a beautiful day the Lord has made. And certainly when we look at this day, it has been a beautiful day for all of us. Let us please bow our heads in prayer. O Lord our God, we thank you for this day. We thank you for sparing our lives so that we might once again meet in these chambers to provide service to mankind. It is through your grace, dear Father, that we are here, and we give thanks and praise and honor to you. We thank you, dear Father, for our volunteers, our dedicated staff, and our supportive family members who are with us every step of the way with our decisions. Guide our thoughts and our hearts as we discuss the items on the agenda for this evening. And may you continue to bless us with such a wonderful city and great leadership. We honor you, dear Father, in every way, and we'll continue to serve you. And again, we say thanks to you. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Are there any additions or deletions to the agenda? If not, do we have a motion second to accept?
This is all of the agenda,
Mr. This is it. Yeah. Short meeting tonight, right?
Mr. Mayor, I'll approve that agenda.
I'll second that.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passage unanimously. Under old business, we don't have any. Under new business, first reading of an ordinance approving the old Aiken Master Plan. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. For the last couple of years, the committee made up of actually close to 100 citizens have been working on developing a comprehensive plan, which we refer to as the Old Aiken Master Plan, which would give our city a vision for the future as to what we'd like to see the entire area, which encompasses basically the parkways throughout the city, to look like. You have spent a number of meetings. I've counted up at least 8 times the council got together to talk about this, and there might have been a 9th meeting that I just forgot about. So we've had a lot of discussion. We've gone through it line by line to take a look as to what changes council may feel are needed. And so we have it before you tonight in the revised form and the revised mapping for your final review and approval, hopefully, so that we can move forward with this, which would then be incorporated with our comprehensive planning documents that we currently have. So for council tonight, this is the first reading of an ordinance to adopt the Old Aiken Master Plan. Upon your approval, second reading, public hearing would be held.
Okay, thank you, sir. Let me ask, is there anyone in the audience that wants to speak on this issue? If they are, unless you want to wait till second reading, but if you'd like to speak, we'll suspend the rules and allow you to speak. Okay, Lee Poda. Do we have a motion in a second to suspend the rules?
So moved.
Okay.
Second.
Show of hands, please. Okay, that passes unanimously. Okay, Lee, certainly. And anyone else that would like to speak on it may follow. And by the way, we'll go back and do the minutes next. I missed that.
Mr. Mayor and Council, it's been a long time since I've looked at this thing, so I read it with new eyes today when I picked the thing up and read it. And I saw a couple of things that really disturbed me. There are a number of what I call nits that I don't think you guys ought to be bothered with, but they need to be put in, typographicals and that sort of thing, and I'm sure that if you don't catch them, somebody else will, but I do think that there are a couple of them that ought to be done, and one is on page 9. It's the last sentence on the page, and it seems to me that sentence is anti-productive to this program process. And let me read it to you. And it says, one of the obstacles to Old Aiken achieving its full potential will be to encourage communication and cooperation between the diverse groups, partnerships with the goal of strengthening Old Aiken are needed. I don't disagree with it, but I don't think that it has a place at the location that it's in. It seems to me to be calling dirty laundry out when there's been no attempt to correct it. And so I would hope that you'll see fit to change that. And the other one that is stuck in my craw quite along is, and I'll have to find it if you'll just wait a minute. Is item number 6 on page 13, and it's carried through, and it's called pedestrian and bicycle friendly. I think that probably the bicycle friendly is a bad word to put in here. It's not even, it's almost not mentioned in all of the following stuff. There is one item that talks about bicycles. I think what you're really doing is talking about alternative modes of transportation, which will include bicycles, but it will also include whatever else may be necessary there. Unless you're going to strengthen the requirements by putting in more to ensure bicycle safety. And I don't see that and haven't seen that as this thing passes along the way. I will sit down at this point and maybe I'll come up with another one or two that jumped out at me, but I do think that you need to look at those two to make sure that they say what you're expecting them to say.
Okay.
Do you have any questions for me?
Any questions, please?
Thank you.
I agree with both of those personally. I see no problem with taking those out. Anyone else like to comment at this point? Okay. All right. It's back to City Council then. What's Council's preference on those two items that Mr. Poe mentioned to us?
The only question I had was the input we got from citizens about leaving that in on the communication cooperation between diverse groups. I mean, I don't necessarily disagree with what he said. I basically agree. I just wonder what the thought was.
Are you talking about page 9 now?
Yeah.
He's coming?
Yeah.
All right, the last sentence. I think that's what we were. That's mm-hmm. what you mentioned. Last sentence on page 9.
Yes. But if none of the committee members have any reason to leave it in there, I certainly would agree to take it out.
What are the obstacles?
I think it's just something you ought to do.
That's what I was.
You don't need a sentence to do it. But.
Yeah.
I mean, I would hope that goes without saying. That's your point? In other words, it goes without saying that
it goes without saying and
why I have
all the rules and requirements that you have behind here.
It doesn't really make much sense to me because it's written either. But that's,
well, I was having a hard Dick, I agree with you. I was having a hard time understanding exactly in the words that are here. Well, shall we take it out?
Yeah, well, let's just take it out.
All right.
Last
and we
sentence.
Can note this on the second reading, so if there happens to be someone who comes in on second reading and objects to that, we can listen to their comments also. Okay, delete. Now, the other one has to do with bicycle friendly, page 13.
Item 6.
The suggestion was to change bicycle friendly to alternate modes of some other transportation, but leave 6 there.
You might get ATVs though.
Yeah, I get an ATV. Scooter.
Those little
it. This. what's this under the goal?
If you look back on
residential base.
The only place it's referred to in the goals and objective is 16. That's the only place that I could find anything about bicycles.
Certainly, Mike.
Mike Andeclaro, 306 Colleton Avenue. Instead of bicycle friendly, could we put non-motorized transportation? Because I can see where on bicycle paths you might have a motor bicycle, a two-wheel motorbike, or even an ATV could be an alternate turn. Terrain vehicle, but how about a non-motorized vehicle? Somebody will ask that question. We're really talking a bicycle, or it could be a buggy. Yeah. Particularly senior citizens, but those tricycle bicycles might be necessary. Just as a comment, you might consider.
Yeah. And what would be wrong if you had a, you know, there are motorized bikes and little scooters and things like that.
Yeah, but you want to mix them up with pedestrians? I don't know if I would like to see that.
No. Not mix them up with pedestrians.
I mean, if they're going to be motorized, they should be in a roadway. But if they're a bicycle, I think what Lee was trying to say is that we haven't talked about bicycles, but we've got to recognize that possibly some people would need some alternate transportation other than motor vehicles.
Okay, well, that's a suggestion, non-motorized.
I understand that when you're looking at number 6, that encompasses goals 16, 17, mm-hmm. 18, and 19. That's the theme, and the theme has to do with a number of different subjects, some of which are talking about motorized vehicles.
Right.
If you would like, why don't us and staff go ahead and look at this, and we can come up with a more appropriate title for that.
Yeah, I think you're right, because that title doesn't cover motorized vehicles.
Pedestrian safety.
If you will, Mayor, I'd like to comment on this.
Sure.
James Holland, I was the chairman of this committee. We've gone through this bicycle friendly several times, at least twice, I know, at the review level. And see, what we're trying to say here is to have areas within the downtown area that friendly, that are accessible by bicycle and walkways for pedestrians. This is going to cut down the number of vehicles that are going through the downtown area. So we felt that bicycle friendly was appropriate. I have no problem with non-motorized, but if we say alternate modes of transportation, we could get into the pocket bikes, the mopeds, the ATVs, and all that. And that's not what we were after. We were thinking really of pedestrians and bicycle pathways through the downtown area and built-up area.
Mm-hmm. Right. Thank you, James.
So, Mr. Holland, you'd prefer just to leave it the way it is?
Yes, ma'am. That's my personal preference. Uh-huh. We reviewed this, and Ed isn't here. I think that was his personal preference. We discussed it, but it's a matter of terminology, however you see it. What we were after is to try to come up with areas that were bicycle and pedestrian friendly, okay?
Yeah.
The absence of motorized vehicles.
Okay.
Right.
You use the key word pedestrian and bicycle pathways.
Well, we could use that too, pathways.
Yeah. Okay.
But that's what we were after there.
The way it's written here,
but the
for
word
me,
friendly is becoming very used in the dictionary these days. If anything is easy or convenient for you, it becomes friendly.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see the changes in the word there over time.
And we're talking about pedestrian and bicycle friendly, right?
Yes, sir.
Not just bicycle friendly. If we take that little dash out between bicycle and friendly, when I look at it, I think of bicycle only.
Right.
Take the little dash out, and then both of them are friendly, pedestrian and bicycle friendly.
Yes, sir.
Is that
that's fine?
That's what we're trying to say.
Now, can I think of what
further back and look at what you say in here on page. 29 and 30, because that's where you attempt to put that plug in. And, you know, the only thing there is 16.3 I that talks about that. And the rest of it doesn't discuss that subject at all.
If you notice, 16 says promote pedestrian and bicycle safety.
But the goals don't include the word bicycle, do they?
I does.
Where are they?
Yeah.
I does.
Oh, okay. I wasn't going to the next page. Take steps to accommodate bicyclists.
No. I'm looking at page 29.
16.3. Mm-hmm. And then 30. Page 30.
Page 30.
Okay. I guess I still don't see what's wrong with it, the way it's written, except with the little dash taken out.
I think it might strengthen it to put wherever you have the word pedestrian, also include bicyclists or bicycles in 16-3. In 16, as well as what you have in I. But I understand it like it is.
I don't think we want pedestrians and bicycles.
I think so too. I don't see where it harms children trying to do by leaving exactly like that.
It's fine. Like
taking the line out.
Take the little dash out.
I understand it like it is.
Well, if we're going to change it, you need to take steps to kind of leave bicycles out. I don't think if you're going to have that in there, you better leave the other one in.
All right, for the time being, why don't we just take the dash out, and then we'll, if we want to talk about it again on second reading, we can do that.
I have no problem with that.
Thank you, James. Okay. Anyone else like to speak on any point on this? Okay. Do we have a motion then on first reading?
I so move, Mr. Mayor, that we approve this as
with those
minor corrections on first reading.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay. We've got a motion and a second to approve this, considering those two changes, based on those two changes. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously. Okay. Now, jumping back to minutes, which I overlooked, are there any additions or changes necessary for the minutes of the meeting of March 28th? And if not, do we have a motion and a second to approve them?
So moved.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously. Okay.
Mr. Mayor, normally we make appointments at this time. Can I make one?
Well, we can do that at any time you want to, I suppose.
All right, I'll wait until after the
okay. All right.
Petition.
Item 2, first reading of an ordinance to amend the traffic management ordinance. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance amending section 11-4.G of the city code. About 6 months ago, you approved the traffic management ordinance. We knew at that time that there may be some changes as we move forward with it. We feel that based on a proposal that's come before Planning Department, that a change would be good, that would both help, we feel, with development of cluster-type housing and yet meet what we feel council was trying to propose in the ordinance. In the ordinance, it states that a traffic study would be based on an annexation of whatever that individual brings the property in at. Let's take for an example that they want to bring a property at RS6. So you would take the number of units that could be built in an RS6 subdivision times the acreage, and that would trigger a certain volume of traffic being generated from that development, and we'd look at the adjoining roadways to determine if a study is needed. In this particular case, a developer would like to come in under an RS6. In fact, it's going before the Planning Commission tomorrow. This is property that borders on Pine Log Road and goes, if you look at an L backwards, it goes from Pine Log and goes back to Richardson Lake Road. Of the 90 approximate acres that are in this development, they only want to use a small portion of this and put in cluster housing, with the rest of the area being left as open space, which is pretty much what we talked about, trying to create as much open space in these developments as possible. They're willing to go ahead and state and record at the RMC, which according to our city attorney would bind them, that there'd be no more than a certain number of units within that development. However, based on the way the traffic management ordinance states currently, because they'd be annexing the 90 acres under an RX6, they would be required to do a traffic study. But based on the number of units that they're proposing on bringing in or developing, they wouldn't be required. In fact, they'd be far less than is what is necessary for a traffic study. So we're asking council to consider making a change to this ordinance, which will allow the developer to voluntarily lower the number of units within a development. That in turn would have to be recorded at the RMC. It would be reviewed by the city attorney and our planning director, and if they feel that the language is proper, it would be recorded in that fashion. It would allow the director to work with the developers and determine up front whether or not a traffic study would be needed. I've said an awful lot. Ed's here. He could explain it in more detail if you'd like. But again, what we're asking you tonight is to modify the traffic management ordinance, that if a developer would like to voluntarily lower the number of units within that development, they could do so, and therefore that may not require a traffic study under those circumstances.
Can that be changed at a later date? And if so, how could it be changed? I mean, you think in terms of someone else coming in, would that be on the...
It would be a restrictive covenant that would stay in place in perpetuity.
Okay.
Wouldn't it be better to ask them to lower the...
I can't tell you the law wouldn't change at some point down the road, but under current law,
right,
it would stay in place in perpetuity.
This would not preclude staff or to... If improvements need to be done to enhance the safety or whatever. Where I'm coming from is this. Mm-hmm. If you have a traffic impact statement done, you would know they would recommend certain things be done for the traffic that's created.
Right.
I can, and Lord knows I come from the development side, but I just happen to see everything. But it could be that somebody say, well, I just don't want to spend any improvements here, so I'll just go ahead and reduce the density so I don't have to do that intersection improvement, which would be required under the traffic impact. You understand where I'm coming from here? So, but I mean, as long as we can still, the staff can look at it and say, we need this improvements done for safety purposes, Roger, I could vote for this. But I mean, it you understand where I'm coming from?
Here's what kicks this into play. The development, this really is an ordinance designed to handle one development, but the development that is coming along highlighted the problem for us. The traffic ordinance as it stands right now requires us to presume, if he comes in asking for RS6 zoning, then we have to presume the highest number of units that could go on a particular piece of land, even if the developer has no desire to develop that many units. And so this developer has come in saying, I want RS6 zoning because he wants a certain lot size, but he doesn't want to build as many lots or as many houses as would trigger the traffic impact study if he was using a different type of zoning. Okay.
Well, this is a way to do things that would cut your density down, which would lower traffic. All I'm saying, right, as long as the staff would have the right to say, well, this, you need this for safety purposes, which I'm sure we have that right, don't we, Roger?
on a...
The ordinance kicks in when a certain number of units are built on a road with a certain level of service. Mm-hmm. That's how the ordinance kicks in.
Right.
But let me ask, if this were a planned unit development, then he gave us a concept plan saying the same things that are coming here, mm-hmm. we wouldn't even have to zone it R6, would we?
That's correct.
That's correct.
That's correct.
Wouldn't that be the more logical way to go instead of changing the ordinance?
We talked to them about that, but they preferred... They weren't far enough along, I don't believe, Ed, with their plans to be able to state definitively with a concept plan what that development would look like. So they prefer to go in with an RS6.
They were also a little reluctant to zone a PUD because of council's right to approve the concept plan.
Gee. So we changed an ordinance instead.
Yeah, that doesn't sound good to me either, Dick. Why we should change an ordinance for that? Why shouldn't we go with the PUD? That's a question I have. Why should we not do that? Is there any good reason why we shouldn't? We have it in our authority, and we can say what's in there, and why shouldn't we?
How many acres is it?
We're talking about
90 acres.
90 acres.
If it is PUD or PR, what
it's
now called.
Yeah.
And he proposes the same number of units he's proposing now, that would not trigger a traffic study either, because he's...
Right. We understand that. Understood.
But yeah, but we wouldn't be changing ordinance.
Right.
Either.
And we'd have a little more control over what he's actually saying and where it's going to go, how it's going to look, and so on.
Is the reason he's not building the maximum number of units because he wants green space or because the land's unbuildable, or do we know?
He's trying to preserve as much open space as he can. He's got some wetlands in the middle of the property, and he wants a certain atmosphere, and so there's houses on small lots, but the rest of it...
He just didn't. Because he felt like the council's going to try to control everything. You don't have to accept the R6 when it comes to you either. He didn't want to.
This R6 stuff just scares me, because that's what we've had before when every tree's been mowed down and we've ended up with a with not what we hoped for. You know.
This is property that's not in the city now.
That is correct.
It's they're asking for annexation.
I hope it's not that.
I can tell you the best way to do it is with a PUD. It gives us more.
Yeah.
It gives him the flexibility to do what he wants to do. He got the density he wants to make the green space. That shouldn't be a problem. And he puts the design he wants in and just submits it. If he does that, he and it ain't gonna take him any longer. He's still got to post it, right?
Correct.
So the only thing we're talking about here is whether it's a PUD or R6. Either way, he doesn't do a traffic impact study.
If it comes in as R6, he would have to do a traffic study unless the ordinance was changed.
Yeah. I'm talking about with the lower density or whatever. But if it was a PUD, now we would actually look at the designs of the homes as well, or just the layout?
And plan residential. And the old PUD.
We're working with right now.
In a planned PUD residential, he just submits the layout to us, right?
You could ask for anything you want. Layout, design of homes, whatever. With RS6, you won't do that.
You can ask for as little or as much detail as you want to under a planned residential or planned commercial. You could tell them specific colors if you wanted.
Could we save trees?
Yes.
Yes.
Under planned residential, again, you could ask for whatever you want to under planned residential. That's the flexibility of council.
I don't see any reason why we shouldn't say we want PR on this. Maybe. Now, it's going to planning tomorrow. We have several planning commissioners here. They may decide to pass it on to us as R6, and we can be thinking about it. But I haven't heard any reason why it shouldn't be planned residential. I mean, what I heard was not very good, as far as I'm concerned. He just doesn't want us to be able to control it. we have the control, and we should control as much as we possibly can. Without hurting, I mean, we're not going to hurt anything, but at least we've got prerogative to look at it and say what's there. Any reason why it shouldn't be PR?
I think we set a bad precedent by changing something that could circumvent the reason why we passed the traffic ordinance to start with. And I think, that's a stretch, and I'm sure that if he submits it, if he's getting the green space, and it's a PUD, it's, you know, there's no reason. It's only 25% green space.
Yeah, he's going to be better off, I think. He's going to have more flexibility if we do that.
The only thing about it, we may see this come up again at a later date.
Yeah.
Something that would not be a planned residential, and then we might address it again at that particular time.
The request did highlight that your traffic management ordinance has a very inflexible provision in it that prevents Ed from being able to do something else to resolve the goal that council had anyway, which is to reduce the traffic impact of a new development. Okay, and a way to reduce the traffic impact is to reduce the amount of homes that are going to be built on a particular piece of property.
But he can do that with the PUD.
He can.
And we don't have to fool with our ordinance. He can submit it as a PUD.
Not every property would necessarily qualify for PUD zoning.
Well, that's true.
As a general rule. As a general rule, why shouldn't we consider everything as a PR that qualifies to be a PR? I mean, there may be some reasons why, I don't know, but if there's anything that could be PR that comes into the city, why wouldn't we say as a general rule that we want that to be PR?
That's what North Augusta does.
That's what North Augusta does?
North Augusta requires all new annexations to be PUD.
I mean, that's the greatest control we have, right?
Does that still
why shouldn't we have that?
Yeah, does that still include the 5% commercial? I don't think so. Does it?
What was that, Ed?
The planned residential zone, allows up to 5% of the area to be commercial if you approve it.
Oh, okay. But it could be zero. And in this case, the comprehensive plan says that we would not have any commercial south of...
The comprehensive plan does not go out that far. It is so far to the west that it's not included.
I thought it went to Richardson Lake Road.
I don't think it doesn't go quite that far. It stopped, as a matter of fact, at the west, the eastern boundary of this property.
Oh, okay.
One thing I understand here, this is not only intended for residential property, but also for commercial. Theoretically, you could have somebody who wants to come in and build a shopping center. The zoning ordinance might allow them to have, you know, 500,000 square feet of commercial space on the property. But they say up front, well, I'm only going to put 300,000 square feet. With 500,000, you might have to do a traffic, or wouldn't have to do a traffic impact study. With 300,000, you wouldn't. And it just didn't seem fair to me to make a developer pay for a traffic study if he's voluntarily, you know, saying, hey, I'm not going to build it to the maximum. So that's was my thinking. It just didn't seem right to have this developer have to pay, you know, $10,000-$15,000 to do a traffic study. If you voluntarily saying, I'm not going to have that anymore.
But we can still do the same thing with the plan because he's got to submit a concept plan. You can say you have this many buildings, etc.
Right, and don't get tied up in this particular piece of property.
Yeah. I'm saying even that big one.
Sure.
Same thing applies. We can still get a concept. If he says that's his concept and he submits the concept, it doesn't require a study.
I'm sorry, make a motion.
Go ahead.
To adopt this on first reading.
To adopt it or turn it?
I feel that we need some public hearing on this rather than just turning it down. Okay.
Well, I still haven't heard any reason, maybe I missed it, as to why it shouldn't be PR.
By doing that, you're looking at the specific development.
Well, I am in this case. That's right. Now, it doesn't give planning flexibility, as you mentioned, in future cases like this.
And Ed, your statement was, let's not get hung up on someone wanting this, but rather allowing some flexibility based on what is being requested here. Is that what you're saying?
For any application where the developer will voluntarily restrict what he's going to do low enough so that he doesn't have to do the traffic study, it'd be good for the planning director to have the flexibility to say, okay, you're voluntarily keeping it to a certain level, you're going to have to do the traffic study.
In other words, your goal as a planner is to say, how do I get my density down? If one of our problems is we want green space and whatever. So this is not a specific, you're trying to look at it from an overall planning aspect.
But what if it's in the middle of an area where there's land to be developed around it, and at this moment there don't need to be extra mitigation at the entrances and exits and stuff, but if the land around it is developed, it's going to be a mess if there isn't. I mean, that would seem to me to be a drawback. You see what I'm saying? That if they don't have to do it now, I'm not convinced everybody's going to build an extra lane or something like that to get people in and out of a area safely if it costs a lot of money, if it costs money. Anyway, and I just wondered, you know, how you deal with that, because this fellow might not have to do anything, but then the next folk will, won't they? And you want them all down the road to have nice.
If they qualify under the ordinance, they would have to do the traffic study.
Yeah. And then they might have to build some extra driveways or whatever the traffic study insists upon, and so we'd have one without, one with, I don't know.
And just one other point on the planned residential part of it. If they come in, don't forget that they can bring the concept plan back to City Council at some point down the road to attempt to have the concept plan modified to increase the density in the neighborhood, you know, higher than what they had originally had. Mm-hmm. When they came to City Council, did need a traffic ordinance at that time.
Right.
But if they had come to you with the request, when they come back, that may qualify them to have to do a traffic study.
Which they could not do if we were to adopt this change in the ordinance.
If you adopt the change, if they opt to go under the new modification and they put a restrictive covenant on this particular piece of property,
right,
then they could not modify that.
Okay. Right. Okay.
They could not
come back.
They could be done.
Right.
The concept plan would not be necessarily a done deal.
Right.
So you do derive that benefit by adopting this ordinance.
So we're safe by adopting the ordinance. I mean, there's no question about that. The question, I think, then is, do we really want to look at each of these as they come forward with a PR, and do we want to have that control, knowing we have to look at each one, however many there would be, and talk about it and maybe make some changes? Do we want to do that, or do we want to leave that up to planning to work that through? Of course. And then it comes to us, and we either approve it or we don't. Seems to me that's a question, then. If we modify the ordinance one time, then it gives planning some flexibility. Mm-hmm. I can see that view. I can see that point. I guess that's what... Is that what you would like to have in planning, Ed? Doesn't matter.
Flexibility.
Yeah, of the modification that we're talking about to the ordinance. Would that make...
To the traffic management ordinance.
Yes, sir?
Yes, definitely.
Okay, you'd like to see what's in before us.
But your goal is to try to limit the density that would then be better planned or whatever. And it makes... It's logical what you've suggested. I guess the...
Yeah. I hadn't thought that far, to be honest with you. My only goal was to be fair to the developer. And again, it just doesn't seem right to make a developer pay for a traffic study. He's voluntarily willing to keep the intensity low enough for a study. It just doesn't seem like it.
But in fact, we could achieve the same goal by going PR.
For residential problems.
Yeah.
Predominantly residential.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's what PR is. Right?
Correct.
So we can achieve the same goal.
Right. Property owner can ask for whatever zoning he wants. So even though he may want PR, he may want RS6 if he takes a particular one.
separate study that has to be done before it goes to planning. So either has to be the traffic study before it goes to the planning commission and then come to you, or it goes to the planning commission and then to you, and you decide whether or not you have to do the traffic study, which is going to delay the development. So, I mean, you can, yes, you can take the approach of having everything planned residential.
Okay.
But either have to do the traffic study up front or wait to come to you and find out if you have to do the traffic study.
Okay, so if we amend the ordinance, that gives some flexibility here, but we also have the right, the authority to say each individual issue that comes to us, no, we want that to be PR, let's say. So we've got two things that we can work with there. Mm-hmm. It gives you some flexibility. And we may not want to look at each one anyway in terms of a PR. There may be a reason why we want to look at a particular one. And we can always do that. Right? Is that right? That's what
we can't say a word about how these R6 houses are grouped on this property. We won't have a thing to say about any of that if we pass this. Is that right?
That's R6.
If it's RX6, no, you would not.
Mm-hmm. Or if it's RSNE, I mean, if it's not PR, we don't have anything to say about it. All there is a lot size. Isn't that right?
That is correct.
Correct. And that's the way it's been.
That's the way it's been.
So here we're talking about a possible change to that.
And I thought that's why we created it, so we would.
But again, not necessarily a change, because we still have the prerogative, if one comes to us that we really a question, we can make that PR. We can decide, no, we won't accept anything but PR, right? So there's some flexibility both with the Planning Commission and what they do, and then with Council, too, we still have that option.
This proposed amendment is separate from whatever the zoning is going to be on a piece of property. They're two different things. I mean, you have the authority to do whatever you want to do with the zoning on an annexation or a rezone. But my concern is when a developer walks in the door and he's got to know whether he has to do a traffic impact study or not, no matter what zoning he requests.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. You could have the flexibility to say, no, because you are keeping this development low intensity and it doesn't trigger a traffic study, you don't have to do a traffic study. Rather than saying, no, I'm sorry, you have to spend this $15,000 on the traffic study, even though you aren't going to keep the existing road.
But then when it comes to us, it's still an open issue. He hasn't done anything, and we can choose either to approve it as it comes to us or say, no way, Jose, we think this should be planned residential because of this, this, and this. Is that what you...
And even if the intensity is still low and it doesn't trigger a study, you can condition the annexation on the building track stuff.
Yeah.
We certainly could condition it upon seeing what the plan is. I mean, I want to know where the green space is. If that would be the critical aspect here. The only other question I have is, if they bring it to us and we say, well, you know, we're really going to, and we go to Pete and say, what about the traffic here on this corner? He says, I need a turning lane. We can require that too. That was my only concern, if it does give us flexibility. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think you need to look separate about whether how we're approving this as a guide for better planning versus. But we still have the flexibility to say no, because they got to submit the plan to us.
Yeah.
But this guy would have to submit a plan to us and look at it and say yes or no. Is that correct?
If it's PR. If it's PR.
No, I'm.
That's the other he does.
If he wants us to do this, then somebody's got to look at it and see if it's RS6. Somebody's got to look at the plan and say yes, it does have the density. The only way you can do that is say yeah, this is the plan. But you'd have to look at it. Somebody would.
No.
If it's not an annexation, that's here to be restricted about limiting it to a certain number of units. Below which, you know, it would not trigger a traffic study. That would be part of your approval. He would record that.
Could we, but the design of it, we would have nothing to say about, right?
Under RS6, no.
Well,
I mean, that's an annexation issue. That's mm-hmm. not a traffic management issue. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you may
the annexation may come before you, and council may very well decide you don't want to annex this property as RS6. But that doesn't solve the problem of a developer coming to Ed with a property already in the city that's zoned RS6, and yet he wants to develop that property, and under the ordinance, he would have to do a traffic management study, because with the max number of units that RS6 would allow, it would trigger the traffic study. And the property is already RS6. It's not a matter of annexing the property. Ed wants to be able to tell that guy, if you'll only build this number of units on this property, you don't have to do a traffic study. Well, you know, that's the situation where you're not annexing the property. And that situation could present itself.
We're not annexing the property, and it's going to...
Property's already in the city, already zoned RS6.
We have
RS6.
A piece of property large enough that we could actually run into that problem?
I'm on top of my head, I don't know. I'm just...
It's hypothetical.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's a hypothetical that can't deal with. I don't see it as a possibility of coming forward. So we're still really only talking about annexed property outside of the current city limits. That's really what we're talking about.
I don't know if there's a tract of land that would exist that cause that problem. I don't know.
Yeah, I
well, it could possibly. Hmm? I mean, it's always a possibility that it could.
4 acres, 5 acres, maybe. Yeah. But I'm saying, would it then be enough density to require a traffic study?
Yeah.
Probably not.
But I have a motion to approve the amendment of this traffic management ordinance.
I'd like to second that motion, because I think this is something that planning has studied and feel that they need this.
Okay.
This is first reading.
They're doing the first reading.
Yeah. Any discussion?
Mr. Mayor, I've got reservations about it, but I'll vote for it this time so I can study a little bit further. Mm-hmm. When I first read it, I didn't think it was that innocuous, but I can see where there could be some potential problems. But I'm willing to at least study it and see if staff recommends that we. I'd like to study a little further, but I would vote for it to move it along.
Yeah. Well, after we've discussed it for a while, it gives planning some flexibility, and. And also, we still have that flexibility to determine on separate issues if we want a PR or not. So it seems like it's a good thing. But I'm like you, too. We'll think about it some more. But I support it on first reading. Anything else? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. All opposed? Okay.
Is there anything that staff could give you as information that would help you in your decision-making at the next meeting, one way or the other?
I'd want to know about the safety aspect of us still requiring something that we would want an improvement done. Mm-hmm. That is a safety issue that I understand the density, but I want to know if we can't do that, then I may vote against this next time. Because if we're just going to say, the only reason why he's doing it is to not do some improvements to the property which would be required by the traffic impact statement, I think I need to find that. That's important to me.
Well, my motion was only to get it to a separate meeting.
That's right. I mean, that's the question. Yeah. We find that out, then I would vote against it next time.
Yeah. But to determine safety issues, you'd have to know the design, wouldn't you?
You have to know. The way I look at a particular thing is, if he's going to put a restriction on it, then I want to see the plan.
Yeah.
I don't see how we want to see the plan. What you tell us it's R6, you're going to tear down all these trees. Well, we want to see what the plan is. Mm-hmm. And that would be part of the annexation, as far as I can see. Still, it still gets the flexibility Ed wants. But I understand what you're saying. You don't want a situation like happened over here on the other, where it was, not a flood would have been the exact right thing for that.
Well, all the pictures looked great, and then when they did it.
Okay.
We're lulled.
Under petitions and requests, resolution declaring April as Fair Housing Month. Mr. LeDuc, please.
We work very closely with HUD and with South Carolina Housing Authority. A lot of things are really moving forward with our housing that council has been very involved with. Just to give you a quick overview, at Ashton Oaks, if you recall, about 14 months ago, we had not sold any homes. By summertime, we finally sold our first four. We started with an additional five. All those five, even though none of them are completed yet, are all sold. We started an additional six that are, the plans have been sent into the city. The houses have not even been started yet, and three of those are sold. And a lot of this has got to do with the financing classes that we have been working with the citizens. Three of the individuals that bought the houses that aren't even started yet went through the financing classes, and 6 months ago, they wouldn't be able to buy a refrigerator. But now, because they've gone through it, they've learned how to go ahead and save money, get out of debt, it's made a difference, and they're buying houses. So, you know, I really just commend Lisa Segura and Bill Huggins and the staff for what they're doing to these citizens. And the fact that Ashen Oaks, like I said, we got that 15 homes. All but two of them are sold, and six of them have not even been started yet. But they're sold. I mean, you couldn't ask for anything better. So the housing that we're doing and Fair Housing Month and what HUD's done with us and South Carolina Housing Authority has just been tremendous. We'll probably be coming to you with some more thoughts and ideas to get Tool Hill going. But everything that we've asked you to do with Ashen Oaks has worked, and we're just ecstatic about that whole project.
Very good. Great job, Roger. You and the staff have done on that, too.
Oh, so we're asking you to approve this, proclaim this as Fair Housing Month.
Okay. All right. Do we have a motion and second?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Okay. Beverly, you wanted to nominate?
Yes, I really need to make an appointment to the Historic Preservation Commission. And I spoke with a gentleman earlier tonight. He has a lot of experience as he lives in the district, and was on council when we set up the Historic Preservation Commission. And I'd like to ask council to appoint Michael Anacleria.
Who?
Michael Anacleria.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll do that next meeting.
Thank you.
That's your nomination. Okay.
He will come in and complete his form. And
okay.
Check him out.
Okay. All right. Got any other nominations for?
Got dates.
I'm sorry.
Dates for a meeting.
Dates?
Randy.
Oh, Randy's giving you dates already?
No, I got dates, and then we can see if Randy can make it.
Well, you haven't asked me for my date. Have you?
No, but he wants one of the dates.
What dates have you got?
Hey, Randy. I got to show you that one before you go.
All right, we're trying to
set up. Okay, we were trying to set up a meeting with Randy. Just a reminder that on Wednesday we have a meeting at 5 o'clock, but we'd like to ask as many council members that can make it at 4 o'clock. We're meeting with the highway department. They're going to go ahead and show us some schematics of what Silver Bluff Road could look like as a three-lane section, sidewalk improvements, etc. We originally had it a much wider section, but they're coming back with some schematics, and they'll be here at 4 o'clock.
On the 13th?
On the 13th. I thought that way you don't have to come twice. Get them coming there. So they'll be here on the 13th to talk about Silver Bluff Road at 4. Then at 5, we're talking about business license. Next week, Tuesday, we're meeting with the Planning Commission. And they're going to go ahead and talk to us about some of the planning agenda items, some that council may have that we could jointly put together a listing of an action agenda for next year. So given the fact that we have one meeting next week, we could have a second one next week on the 21st if Randy's available and council's available. That's a Thursday night.
Is at what time?
What time is the one on the 19th?
6:30? 6:30.
Okay.
The 21st, is that a date that you all can make or not?
I can do it.
Yeah.
Thursday.
The 21st. What time would you like to make it? 5 o'clock, like we did in some of those other meetings? Try to get out of here then by 6:30, or like to do it later in the evening? I'm sure Randy would rather do it earlier than later.
Okay.
Doesn't matter. Good.
The 21st is slightly preferable to the 19th.
5 o'clock, so okay with me.
On the 21st.
You want to do it in
21st?
The morning? Would it be better in the morning for you, or is it?
Can we do it in the morning?
Morning's better than evening.
Starting at 9, maybe?
We'd like to start at 6 a.m., Randy. Are you available?
No.
I have a very important engagement, but I could cancel it.
Hey, your city council is not available at 6:30. What time, 9?
8 or 9. Do we usually...
She wants 8. How about 8:30?
About 9.
I can't be here 9.
9 o'clock.
Morning, you can't make it?
We do can.
They can't make it in the morning.
Well, can everyone make it in the afternoon?
I can make it at 7. I can't, but he said I don't want him to come down that late. I'm just stuck at 5 o'clock.
Randy, do you mind coming down at 7?
On the 21st?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
In the evening?
Do it a little earlier than 7.
Yeah. 5 to 6.
6, all right?
Make it at 6?
No, so just make it 5. Just go ahead and make it earlier, and I'll see if I can switch things about.
We're going to approve everything that's here already, so it doesn't...
Well, that leads to a question. We'll put it on the agenda for the 25th, the first reading? Whatever we come up with in the work session, at least we can go through a first reading, and that'll move it ahead.
Good thinking.
I put it on the 25th on the agenda for first reading.
Okay. Typically, we get the agenda out on the 21st, which means that you get the agenda out on the 22nd.
Well, that's great. That's all right.
If you all don't mind.
Good. So 5 o'clock on the 21st, then. That suits you?
21st at 5 o'clock.
Is that okay with everybody here?
At 5 o'clock?
Yeah,
we're back at 5.
Okay, we're back at 5.
5's just as good as 6.
Jane can't make that.
Let me see what I can do. I'll work on it.
Okay, all right. 5 o'clock.
Because nothing else suits anybody else, so I'll see what I can do.
There's my morning meeting.
Good.
Okay. And then we'll have it hopefully for first reading. Gary and Randy can start working together and start looking at commissions. And how that could all be done, whether we go with the existing commission or a separate one, maybe have some thoughts for you at that evening. Okay, that's all.
Okay, is that it? Anything else? Okay, we stand adjourned. Make it official. It's only official when you sign the gavel. It's executive.